Jimmy Traore's put through his own net in comic style. And Burnley lead Liverpool by a golden ell.
Greetings, friends. Welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben van der Velde. Sometimes everything just clicks into place. You see the world as Spider-Man does when he's in Spidey-sense mode. Every raindrop, every bead of sweat, the pumping heart of every living creature, all as you're in a flow state, at one with the moment, alive to reality's possibilities. Here at Worst Foot Forward, the nearest we get to a flow state is when we've got some brutal food poisoning and it's flowing through our bodies. Our spidey sense is the fear that there are spiders everywhere, and the moment that we're stuck in is an endless exam hall where we're naked, everyone's naked, there's too much nakedness. And joining me is the magic moment to my momentary lapse of reason, Barry McStay.
I'm naked, right now.
Right now, as is tradition.
60 episodes on in, it's time the audience knew that we do this in the nude to relax each other.
You're relaxed, I'm rather tentative.
You're not relaxed, it looks relaxed.
Yeah, come on.
I like to make sure that the audience have a very vivid image of us.
Yeah, I mean, there were previous podcasts where we've been dressed like some sort of 18th century Harlequin, but this time, apparently, we're in the nude. And to be fair, because this podcast is football-themed again, let's pretend that we're in a communal bath together.
The ice bath, yeah, cooling down afterwards. Or just taking such a relaxed approach to it, we're sort of mimicking Arsenal's approach to defending at the moment. It's very laid back, there's not much input.
Yeah,
feeling very nude and vulnerable.
Damn right. Welcome, American listeners. There's going to be an hour of references you simply don't get.
Oh yeah, it's soccer, guys. It's that sort of football.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will I introduce our guest?
Yes, you totally should.
Excellent. Well, this is a topic chosen by our guest, and our guest this week is a former civil servant and holder of a master's degree in biotechnology, but he found his way into comedy after Googling online writing courses. Yes, he's a sad example of the dangers of Googling potentially inflammatory phrases. One minute you're a mild-mannered civil servant, the next you're on stage at the Brighton Comedia whipping the crowd up into an unhinged frenzy. A proud Lancashire Pakistani Muslim, his comedy pokes under the skin of British values and Islam with his debut show Tez Talk, taking the form of an introductory seminar to potential new recruits to the faith. It earned him rave reviews, a run at the Soho Theatre, a BBC Radio 4 series, and a place on many people's must-watch lists, including the Home Office. TNT. TNT says he has sharp wit. The Herald praised his pin-sharp observations, and Nous cheered his sharp wit and even sharper dress, illustrating reviewers' high esteem for his talent and low esteem for a thesaurus. So, who is he? Well, to be blunt, it's Tez Ilias.
Yeah!
You are so sharp. It's like a porcupine is in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Our absolute pleasure. I love the fact that all of your press shots and all of the reviews are about how sharp a dresser Tez is. He's here in a tracksuit.
I thought we were all naked. Yep, yeah, tracksuit. and slightly aroused. I've ditched the suit.
Is it not going to be the suit on stage anymore?
No, because I suffer from alopecia. Mm-hmm. And so I've now lost some of my hair on top of my head, unfortunately, due to alopecia. And so I'm very self-conscious about it. So I like wearing a cap to cover it on stage. Cap doesn't really go with the suit.
Could you not have gone top hat?
Yeah, that might be like a bowler hat or something. So I play with it, maybe.
Yeah.
When they call me for Live at the Apollo, I'll have a think about what sort of hat I can wear with a suit that I would obviously wear.
I'll go down the Sia route where it's like you've got like a bag over your head or just like facing the back of the stage. Or
and just listen to my words.
The comedy's all in the words.
You can just wear a bowler hat and be like, look, guys, I'm assimilating. For fuck's sake, I'm assimilating so much.
Actually,
right now.
It would probably really piss some people off.
Yeah, probably.
See how he's appropriated our culture. How very day. why biotechnology, first of all? Forget the comedy.
So I have a bachelor's in biochemistry.
Oh, biochemistry, excuse me.
And a master's in management.
Oh, cool.
So I had this wish to be a doctor when I was younger, as is everyone from my background.
to avoid disappointment.
Yeah, and then I didn't quite get the grades at A-levels, but then I took science at A-levels. I was like, well, what else can I do? And ended up doing biochemistry at Lancaster University. And then about a year, 2 years in, I was like, I don't really fancy a career in science. It's not really my thing. More of a people person. So I looked at the university, thought, what else can I do? And we have a great management school at Lancaster. Mm. So I did a conversion management in masters.
There goes the home office alarm again.
But I feel like that's teasing your family, because like, he's going to be a doctor. No. Oh, but he's going to be a scientist. All right, management. That's all right. And I'm like, you're a fucking jester.
Yeah. Constantly just went boom, 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 boom. Bottom of the ladder. Could have been a drug dealer or a fraudster. No.
Would that have been more acceptable?
It would have been a lot better. I'd have been home more often.
That's the main thing. We always ask your guests what they're worst at in the world.
I am definitely, at least in the Premier League, worst of at singing.
Really?
I have such a bad singing voice. It's just terrible. You know, like Ricky Gervais, that did David Brent bit in The Office when he starts dancing.
And then
initially, like, oh yeah, also, and then they're like, oh my god, my singing is the equivalent of that.
Wow. Are you ashamed of it, or are you proud of it? Because there are a lot of bad singers who go, don't care, still going to do karaoke.
Yeah, I think I'll be proud of it. So simultaneously, I have a really bad singing voice, and I can't remember lyrics to anything. So I could listen to the same... I can remember dialogue fine, but I could listen to the same song every day, and maybe I'd get the chorus. Maybe. Yeah. But there's no way I'll know the verses.
Have you ever been sort of like... scolded for your singing?
Oh yeah, the first time when I was in primary school, we went to Church of England school, and I used to belt out the hymns at assembly.
Good man,
love it. And I thought I could sing. No one ever told me otherwise, and I just thought I could, because the words were there, and I'd go along with the teacher and sort of hit, I assume, the notes or whatever. And then obviously didn't do any singing after primary school, and then got to university, and there was a karaoke at our because we have a collegiate system, so in our college there was a karaoke night, and I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And let them choose. And they chose...
I'll never let them choose.
They chose Holly Valance's Kiss Kiss.
I think we found out what the walk-on music for your next tour is.
And I just, to that point, I still thought I could sing. Until the point that I got to the... And at that point, I just knew that I couldn't sing.
Yeah.
But I started singing. And apparently... I sang in an Indian accent.
Oh, Tez!
Oh, no. I don't know. I was terrible.
The way some people sing in American accents, they can't help it. Yeah.
And then since then, I've been really self-conscious about it.
I have a friend who was in the choir in school, in primary school, I think it was. And but I think like everyone was in the choir at that point. But they were so bad that the teacher would just go along and quietly say, just mouth along to the word. Just everyone else is singing. You just... opening and closing like a goldfish.
I do that now. Whenever I do karaoke, I make sure I go on with someone else, and then I will just mouth along and let them sing. And then take equal amount of credit.
My mum, when she was in school, was in the choir, and there was a nun, was the choir mistress. She would go along the line, sticking her knuckle into the girl's chest if they weren't singing correctly, if they weren't singing the right notes.
Wow.
As if that was a good way of, you know, enhancing their singing voice.
Oh, the classic knuckle technique.
Yeah, proper nun knuckle.
Nice. Wow, brutal. Yeah. See, I mean, when I was studying my bar mitzvah, my rabbi would just promise me extra donuts if I sang well. Because that's the difference between our faiths, you know. It's like, we're very much about the carrot, and you're very much about beating people over the head with the carrot.
We're also with the literal sticks, we will.
We are chatting this week, as you said, about the world's worst centre of football, specifically the world's worst central defender. You're a Blackburn Rovers fan,
I am a Blackburn Rovers fan, yeah.
How are they doing at the moment?
Top of League One, mate.
Top of League One?
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I hadn't checked and I thought they were still in the Championship.
No, we got relegated from the Championship last season. But we're winning games most weeks, and it's bizarre. I don't know how to feel about it.
You haven't felt this way since 1995, 96.
We've got scorers and assists on top of the charts. We just... Don't know what to do with these feelings.
It's so exciting.
It really is. And Blackburn are a great team, because I remember when I first got into football around the start of the 90s, 91, 92, and just before Blackburn got catapulted into the Premier League, there was a really iconic FA Cup third round match where you beat Liverpool 2-1.
Yeah.
And it was someone, Moran, scored the winner.
Kevin Moran.
Kevin Moran.
The Irish football.
Yeah, and it was a proper... dirty pitch, like an absolute mud bath, and it was like a last minute winner. And still, when you know, when it was when Liverpool were still considered the greatest team in the country.
I think was it when Kenny had taken over at Blackburn as well? I think he was returning
to that summer.
Yeah, that summer.
Yeah, and obviously we've got a link because I'm a Newcastle United fan, and you, Blackburn was the incubator for Alan Shearer before he came home and won
nothing.
Fuck all.
At least he won something.
We're all linked by Kenny as well. It's lovely.
No, he was brought home by Keegan.
Oh yeah, brought Keegan, of course.
Yeah. Kenny did his best to ruin him. We are having far too much fun talking about the good side of football. We need to talk about some absolute basement level dreich. So Barry. Dreich, that's a Scottish word.
Is it?
Yeah, Scottish word meaning rubbish.
Titus Bramble.
Wow, getting the punches in early. Fine.
I just wanted to clear the air straight away.
I'm going to avoid Titus Bramble because it's such an obvious choice.
It is.
For worst footballer, let alone centre-back.
So if we're going to... Firstly, you should bear in mind, this is our second footballing episode. We did World's Worst Striker, and my, were there a lot of Newcastle United players on that as well.
Ciccio Grabbi, I'll throw in from Blackburn Rovers. We bought him for £7 million from an Italian second division team. We always had a really soft spot for him because he's one of those players that tried so hard. And then and a little bit of bad luck as well, but just clearly wasn't quite up to the pace.
Yeah.
But he scored one goal against Liverpool, like in November, the 12th game, and just the crowd went nuts.
It's the sort of goal you're like, oh, it's November, maybe he's found his foot. No,
it's like, that's it. And then that was the one goal he scored. But it was
like Andrea De Sena's lob in the 4-1 Liverpool 99 game. Like, you're a terrible player, but that lob, though.
Go on then, unload on Titus Bramble, and I will say a number of words in his defence before also unloading on Titus Bramble.
It's me, isn't it? To be fair, I actually have not written Titus Bramble's name then, because as Tez said, it's so obvious that I'm just going to leave him, going to park him.
It's
everyone
like
can
kicking
go,
a puppy, isn't it?
Yeah, everyone can go look at the numerous YouTube videos of, oh, Titus.
Let's just say with Titus Bramble, the thing about him was that he wasn't overall a bad footballer. For 80 out of the 90 minutes, he was raking Franz Beckenbauer style
lapses. His lapses, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like Mickey Quinn used to say, he was the fastest player in the world over half a yard.
Yeah, you leave Sumo alone.
Firstly, I thought I'd mention some of the worst Liverpool defenders I've ever witnessed play. Do you remember Jimmy Traore's amazing back heel own goal against Burnley?
Jimmy Traore, yeah. he was on my shortlist.
Yeah, do you remember? You know the way you say some people look like Bambi on ice. Mm-hmm. This guy looks like Bambi on top of Bambi on top of Bambi on ice, the top of a pyramid of Bambi.
Yeah, and the lowest Bambi is wearing roller skates.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, can we give him his full title, please? Champions League winning footballer Jimmy Traore.
We managed to also sign Maurizio Pellegrino. Is he Southampton manager now? Yeah. For 6 months at the twilight of a very dim career.
He is both the shittest Maurizio in the Premier League and the shittest Pellegrino in the Premier League.
And Philip Deggen, a player so bad I had forgotten he had played for us. He was a Swiss international. Mainly played a right back. We bought him in 2008, and on his debut, he collided with Sammy Hippier, broke two ribs, and punctured a lung.
Just to describe Sammy Hippier for our American listeners.
The greatest central defender of the last 10 or 12
absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely. Imagine if a Finnish pine tree was converted into a man by a wizard, and then you've got Sammy Hippier.
Yeah, well, he absolutely floored Deggen. And on his comeback, he broke his metatarsal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He finally got his first league start in 2009, October 2009, over a year after he signed against Fulham, and was sent off for a foul against Clint Dempsey. So I think he played about 12 games for us over the course of his 2 or 3 years at the club before they finally went, you know, it's probably not working out. Every time you come on, you get a paper cut from the grass or something. He's the most injurable player alive. Pascal Segan, you remember he used to play for Arsenal?
Yeah.
Arsenal terrible. Fans had a chant about Pascal. He's bald, he's shit, he plays when no one's fit. That was his own fans used to chant that about him. Marco Materazzi... Yes. Went on to be an amazing footballer in his own right, and goaded Zidane into
absolute,
a headbutt.
Terrible person.
Horrendous human being, but quite a solid defender, and was the receiving end of Zidane's famous headbutt. Yeah. World. Yeah. When he wasn't at his heights that he later hit, Materazzi did sign for Everton in 1998 for about 10 months, played 27 games for them, and was sent off 4 times at a rate of less than 1 in 7 games per red card.
Wow. Bloody hell, that makes Sergio Ramos seem like a nut. A nice little guy who visits his granny every weekend.
Actually impressive.
I don't know how you have time to do all of that. I was finding some... Then that led me down the route of sort of interesting facts about footballers. This is completely off topic. But Javier Mascherano, who is not a central defender, joined Barcelona. And after 318 games... Mascherano...
Mascherano. Sorry, your accent threw me then.
Sorry. And after 318 games, he finally scored a goal for them at the end of the year.
Because... They gave him a penalty.
They gave him a penalty.
Oh! That's the generosity of Lionel Messi.
Yeah. And you know what? 318 games. In those 318 games, he managed to score 6 own goals. Before he finally got his actual goal. And that led me to own goal scoring defenders. Mm-hmm. A bit of fun, bit of a quiz. Who scored the most own goals in the Premier League era? Does anyone know?
I do know that. It is a draw between Richard Dunn, Frank Sinclair and Jamie Carragher, I believe.
No. Richard Dunn far out in front, actually. He's got 10, for 3 different clubs, Villa, City and QPR. Jamie Carragher is on 7 and Frank Sinclair is on 5.
Notable mention for Frank Sinclair, who scored an own goal from 40 yards out.
Yes.
I once scored a tremendous own goal. I've never a very good, I'm still not now, but I've never a very good footballer. But my dad used to coach a team, like an under-14s kind of team, and a lot of my cousins were very good, and we're friends with this really good team, on which I was like, essentially I was the mascot of this team, my dad's own team. And in training once, so we played like, proper training game, and our striker... That star striker was very good, very fast, very physically, very strong as well. So I was the last defender, and the ball came over the top, and I could feel him breathing down my neck. And like, he's faster than me and stronger than me. So I got to the ball first, and what I meant to do was boot it out for a corner.
Oh no!
And I was about, if it was a full size pitch, it was the equivalent of like being 30, 40 yards out.
Whoa.
And I just smashed it into the top corner. Just absolutely. And the keeper full dive for it as well. It was just. And it was almost like, should I celebrate? Because
I'm never going to
score a goal better. It was so good.
That must be so conflicting for your dad as well. I'm just like, bloody hell.
I'm in the wrong position.
it was impressive.
Yeah, Sinclair's goal was 2002 against Middlesbrough from about 35 yards. So unexpected was it. The original football, the cameraman isn't on the pitch at the time. He's not pointing the camera at the pitch. At the time, he slots it past Ian Walker. I think they'd cut to a shot of the manager or the crowd because it's only the 3rd minute of the game. Ball being passed around the back line. No one within 10 yards of him. But that came 3 years after, in 1999, he scored 2 last-minute own goals in consecutive weekends. Against Arsenal in a game they lost 2-1 thanks to Frank's goal, and Chelsea in a game they drew 1-1 the following week.
Oh, poor guy.
That was when he was playing for Leicester, of course.
Okay.
But the number of own goals is one thing, but the regularity of scoring own goals is another. So Frank Sinclair scored, obviously, he scored... 5 own goals, and sort of he's associated with the spectacular ones, but he only scored 1 own goal in every 48 games, so it's not that higher turnover. Richard Dunn, 1 in 43. Carragher's 7 own goals came over the course of 508 games, so he scored 1 in every 73. The trades off against the fact he only scored 3 goals for Liverpool in that time. Martin Skrtel, 7 own goals in 242 games, so the same number as Carragher, but in less than half the number of matches.
That's the sort of efficiency I look for in a defender.
Yeah, 1 in 35, but he scored 16 goals for Liverpool, including 7 in one season, by the way.
Wow.
Which is a decent turnover for...
I'll give you a stat in a second, but carry on.
Can you then add, like, own goals to goals scored in a season to have a full total of the season?
Yeah.
They should...
Like Crystal Maze when you take off the...
Yeah, the silver.
They should award, like, the opposite of the golden boot for the most... They should award the wooden boot for the most own goals in a season.
Well, Skrtel did score 4 in one season. Obviously, his pinnacle, I think, of his own goal scoring career. But the person with the most own goals per appearance in the Premier League is Gareth McCauley, Northern Ireland international, who played 187 times in the league, 6 own goals, 1 goal every 31 games, which is about 1 a season. But he did score 15 goals at the right end, so. Every two and a half goals, he scores an own goal as well.
That is, you know, when like Big Sam is crunching the numbers, that's one that he really doesn't want to have to deal with.
Balance off the two. And a Blackburn Rovers player. Do you know Shane Duffy?
Yeah.
Irish international Shane Duffy. August 2016, he scored 3 own goals in a week. Yeah.
I just wiped a lot of recent Rovers history out of my memory. But yeah. That doesn't surprise
me. He scored 1 in a 3-0 defeat to Wigan and 2 in a 2-1 loss to Cardiff City. Both of Cardiff's goals. And was then sent off in that game.
I think you'd lose your head. You're like, if I stay on, I'm playing a hat trick.
I'm doing more damage. I'm doing more damage than good.
Yeah, just looking at the manager going, are you going to? Are you going to take me off? Fine, I'll take it into my own hands. Yeah.
It was for kicking the ball. Because
has anyone ever scored an own goal of like a hat trick of own?
Well, yes, they have. I give you Stan Van den Boys, who scored an own goal hat trick while playing for Germinal Ekeren in Belgium against Anderlecht in 94-95 in a game they lost, 3-2.
That's like, that shit is fixed, isn't it?
It's
like,
amazing. Like,
wait, does he get the match ball? Or do they burst the match ball and then give it to him?
I think they give him the unball, like the pig before it's transformed into the ball. managed to score 4 own goals. Inter beat Catania 5-0 in 1960-61. And Catania scored 4 of the 5 goals against themselves.
I think my favourite hat-trick stat is, what was the player's... I think it was in the Copa America, and the guy missed a hat trick off penalties.
Oh,
do you remember that? He was a really good striker as well.
Yes, that's right. I can't remember.
Palermo or something like that, his name was.
Yeah.
I think it started with a P, but he was a really good footballer, but he missed a hat trick off penalties in one game.
That's heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's fair enough. You miss penalty number one, you have another go. If you miss 2 penalties.
And the third one, you're like, oh, let's give it to someone else. I think he was very good at penalties, and I haven't taken the statistics, but just anecdotally, left backs.
Yeah.
Left backs are always very good at taking penalties. Dennis Irwin at United. Ashley Cole was always very good.
Julian Dix.
Yeah.
Stuart Pearce.
Mihailovic.
John Arne Riesen missed the penalty for us in the Champions League.
Sinisa Mihailovic once got a hat trick of free kicks for Lazio. That's
Ian Hart.
Yeah, Ian Hart.
Yeah. I think what it must be, it's because it's a way that the keeper's not expecting it. And if you're a left back, you're really good at hammering the ball out.
Yeah.
Stuart Pearce, apart from the most famous one. Apart from that, you had a very good record. We have a central defender at the moment called Charlie Mulgrew. For Rovers, Blackburn Rovers. And
he used to play in Scotland.
Yeah, he did. He did. Very good footballer. He has scored 12 goals for us this season, including 5... direct free kicks.
Oh, yes,
for a central defender.
This season.
Amazing.
Oh, I love specialist footballers. Just every, like,
they've
again.
They've got that one party trick.
Yeah, he's left footed.
Yeah.
And he takes our penalties and our free kicks.
And it's great, though, because you go, everyone knows what's about to happen. It's like when John Arne Riise would step up, take a kick, you know he's going to hammer it top left corner. Or
but this is more,
like
he's
that.
More, of a, pl- he's, a
he's a bit more placement.
Yeah, he's more placement.
It's
but
just great.
Just
you can
5
see
in a season, direct free kicks is mad. And they're not like, you're not like, League One, whatever. These are like right in the corner, kind of like, these would be anyone. Kind of.
Well, he's a Scottish international, Charlie Mulgrew. So League One is about his level.
But I should get on to my choice. Now, I'm slightly bending the rules here because I've picked someone who basically spent most of his career at right back, a defence midfielder. I think probably slotted in at central defence now and again. But his story is amazing.
Go on.
His story is literally his story. His name is Peter Storey. He's voted the 50th greatest Arsenal player ever. If you haven't heard of Peter Storey, well, you're in for a treat. He was at Arsenal for 15 years. He was a proper club man. 391 appearances, 9 goals, 19 England caps. He won the double with them in 1970-71. And, you know, decent career. He was so solid and continuous in that team for most of his career, and then spent the last few months of his career at Fulham playing in a side in the late 70s that included George Best, Bobby Moore and Rodney Marsh. This is late 70s.
Wow. That's Fulham and Marsh. China now.
Exactly. Going to Fulham. And he was Peter Storey's thing was he was a hard man on the pitch. He often said, man mark the skillful player on the pitch.
The hatchet man.
Exactly. Hard tackling. Ironically, first sent off not for a major foul, but for bad language in a match against Burnley. John Giles, the great Irish.
Bring that out of you, though.
Yeah, exactly. they're your main local rivals, aren't they?
Yeah. Very sad how well they're doing at the moment. It's very sad. Very, 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 very sad to see.
Disappointing.
It's all right. Not least with Sean Dyche, who's a proper bald, ginger-bearded, gravel-head monster of a man.
He's almost like the anti-Mourinho Guardiola kind of to them, isn't he? Hey, guys. I love him. I like him, but I can't wait till he leaves Burnley.
I feel like he's what Ian Dowie has evolved into in his Pokemon form. John Giles, the Irish international, who was no softy himself, said that Peter Story was the most frightening guy I ever played against.
Because if you were to give me the name Peter Story and say, what does he do for a living? I'd say, like, he hosts the news for a local BBC radio station.
Yeah, you can imagine. He said to himself, the trick was to get in early as possible, hit them hard, give them a good wallop, make them feel as if they'd been in a car crash or hit a brick wall.
That was my dad played amateur football for a long time to a quite high level, and that was his
personal
defender. That was how he
used particularly it. In those days, that was the trick. You'd go out and you make a really big tackle.
I've seen my dad play recently, and he's lost all his pace.
Well, of course, as a man in his 50s or 60s,
such a dirty bastard.
That's it, they get to a certain age, they can read the game, they don't have the pace anymore.
He kicks people. Like, what are you doing?
It's old school, isn't it?
Yeah.
Proper Peter Story handbook.
Yeah, there's not like the Cruyff term, but there's also the Ilias elbow.
Yeah.
He, in his autobiography, which is an excellent read if you can find extracts of it online, he writes about being nearly dropped for the 1971 Cup final. He said, it was as if I'd spent ages making love to the most beautiful woman in the world, only to be kicked out of bed 5 minutes before the climax.
5 minutes before the climax.
If you can predict it.
Well, that's 3 minutes before the foreplay.
Words to use to describe him in his own words were assassin, boot boy, bully, calculating, cold eyes, destructive, dirty, hatchet
man. It sounds like you're describing the best footballer of all time.
I know. The best one is yet to come. Merciless, pernicious, rogue, ruthless, thug, vicious, and, according to Nobby Styles, a bastard's bastard. But it's his, obviously a terror to play against, but it's his post-footballing career I am most interested in, because not only has he bounced back and forth between his third and fourth wives for the last 15 or 20 years.
Oh dear, I really like
but
this guy.
In 1975, he took out a 3-year lease on the Jolly Farmer pub in Hackney, frequented by, among others, Howard Marks, the famous drug smuggler. And during his time there, he helped the local gang, the Barry Brothers, in a gold counterfeiting scam.
Hang on, is that the formative years of the Chuckle Brothers? Before they were like, we need to have the same last name, not the same first name.
Chuckle. Yes, of course. That must have been to me, to you, to jail. he stored the cast dyes, the things they used to mould the gold coins with in the pub. He was arrested and charged, and while on bail, he set up a brothel called the Calypso Massage Parlour to try and raise funds to enable him to flee to Spain. And he was caught for that as well.
Good.
This is while on bail for the other thing. And so he did time for that. He paid a £700 fine, 6 months suspended sentence, then got 3 years for the counterfeiting scam, got out, and set up a minicab firm, during which time he stole two cars that were on hire purchase for the firm and did another 12 months suspended sentence. So he thought, I'm going to make it good now. I'm going to become a trader. He became.
And this is a top level professional.
He was an England international. Well, he was an England international. Sort of a lull in England's international period, but, you know, proper club man and league winner.
But also, this is still in the era where even if you were a top level professional footballer, after you retired, you might have to go and own a pub or own a restaurant or turn to crime. Like organised crime. Yeah.
Well, he spent not even petty crime. Quite.
Organised crime.
Well, you say that. He became a trader on Portobello Market. And during his time doing that, he was arrested and jailed for 28 days for smuggling 20 porn videos from the continent into England in a spare tire in his car. Which is, you know, from the heady heights of gold counterfeiting to 20 blue movies in the back of the car. It's quite a fall.
Yeah, having a porn movie that's covered in tire marks as well does not sound an attractive proposition.
And the best bit of all is, what do you think happened after that? 5 years later, he found himself as the chauffeur for the Emir of Qatar.
Wow.
Yeah, he drove around the head of the Qatari royal family, who was the emir there until 2013, while he was in Turkey. He now is retired and living in the south of France, but that is a hell of a roller coaster of a career.
Gotcha. I mean, two things. Firstly, if you're a billionaire and you're going to have a chauffeur, you want them to be a bit of a hatchet man. Secondly, I'm really hoping that Peter Story is going to be the mascot for the 2022 Qatari World Cup. just like a giant felt bastard's bastard coming out into the arena, sweltering.
It looked like a big one of those big bubbly suits.
Yeah,
absolutely. He's called Bastard Bastard.
Yeah. BB for the kids BB market. For the kids. He's got a little felt hatchet in one hand.
Yeah.
He needs a Game of Thrones cameo appearance.
He does, doesn't he? I think there were talks about making a film of his life, which haven't come to fruition.
That will obviously be directed by Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, Sean Bean, obviously.
Vinnie Jones playing. but yes, I think not just as a nightmare to play against, but also a nightmarish career of crime afterwards. Peter Story is my choice for the world's worst central offender.
Okay, Tez, who are your suggestions for the world's worst centre-back?
So, we've had some bad central defenders at Blackburn. I can't say this guy's the worst centre-back at Blackburn ever, but I'm going to nominate a good friend of yours, Darren Peacock.
Darren Peacock, part of Kevin Keegan's almost title winning team.
Maybe he was good for you guys. Mm-hmm. He was bang average for us. He once got out jumped by little Janino.
I thought you were going to say little Jimmy Cranky.
Janino was like, what, 5 foot one and a half or something? Yeah. You know, he's a small lad.
Cut from his mould.
Darren
Coutinho,
Peacock is a good 6 foot. You know, he's a big central defender. Got out jumped by Janino. Did a bit of a run up, but still, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, but Janino is like a flea.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
obviously, he can lift 15 times his own body weight. You know, when Janino.
Peacock has the tail, you see. He should have had the axe.
I just feel like he never recovered from that.
No, did you get Peacock after he'd played for us?
Yeah, well, there you go, he was used goods. Yeah, but he wasn't great for us. He was bang average for us.
Mm.
But I think I'm going to...
Blackburn specialised in getting sort of players after they'd been good, I feel like. Particularly, like Henningberg joined you after he'd been good.
No, Henningberg was our centre-back winning. You're thinking of Bolton Wanderers.
Oh, was he? Yes.
No, we had some... We were very good at developing players and then selling them on. So Henningberg was at us before he
all
went
the way
to
United. Oh,
and
me.
Then he came back to us.
And we
rehabilitated Craig Bellamy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So he was very good for you guys. He was brilliant for us.
Yeah.
And then we went to Liverpool. Benny McCarthy was great for us.
Yeah, wow. Benny.
Rocky Santa Cruz was great for us.
Rocky.
We had some. David Bentley was great for us.
Bentley.
And bang average everywhere else.
David Bentley was the future of football.
Yeah, he was the new David Beckham.
We've had some.
And then two guy who is the greatest Blackburn Rovers footballer of all time. I watched Boxing Day 2006. Blackburn played Liverpool at home. And two guy was in the midfield for us. Midfield for Liverpool was Xabi Alonso and Steven Gerrard.
Yeah.
And two guy virtually didn't leave the centre circle, just played both of them off the park and won 1-0. It was one of the greatest performances I've ever seen.
That's so good. That's like when Jan Mulby used to play for Liverpool in the 80s, and Jan, who was the size and shape of a killer whale, and would do the same thing, does not move more than 10 yards, but just ping passes everywhere whilst eating a bacon sarnie.
Yeah, they just stand on like a little rotation ball and just go, receive facing one way, turn, pass the other way. Like, they're like toll gates.
Yeah.
So good. And... But my nomination for worst centre back is a man called Igor Stepanovs.
He used to play for Arsenal, didn't he?
Yeah. So Igor Stepanovs was signed by Wenger back in 2001. When, in his defence, Wenger still had a good eye for a good footballer, and he was laughably signed as a kind of backup / replacement for one Tony Adams.
Yeah, Adams was just about sort of at the end of his career, wasn't
one
he?
Of the greatest English centre-backs of all time. Ungraceful, but nevertheless effective and great. And over a four-year Arsenal career, he played 17 games.
4 years.
Including, famously, the 6-1 drubbing by United.
That's right.
And he was so bad, though, that the Arsenal fans really liked him. You know, someone is so bad, you're kind of like, oh, bless you.
Oh, yeah, that's most of the Newcastle squad in my adult life.
I always felt like Stepanovs was, when you'd look at a team shot, it's same way Arsenal had a habit of having, like, one rubbish centre-back that when they had to play, you'd be like, ooh, open field day for us. Same with Oleg Luzhny when he was at Arsenal as well. Stepanovs and Luzhny.
Pascal Seagan.
Seagan again. You know, you'd be like, oh, great, they're playing. Let's just open the floodgates.
Yeah, I'm going back to Pascal Seagan. Like, his name is Pascal the Swan.
Yes.
That's not somebody striking fear into the heart of attackers.
Paddling like crazy underneath and above the line. Pascal's cage.
But, like, Igor Stepanov, like, he's a Lithuanian footballer.
He was international, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean,
so would I be if I was Lithuanian. But the point is, if you're Arsene Wenger, surely that's... If your scout comes and says, we've got this footballer, he's from Lithuania, I'd be like, let me stop you there.
Yeah.
It's a no from me.
But his name is Igor, like Biscan. Fuck off.
But this is the beauty, though, sometimes. What I love is when you get countries that are probably third or fourth
George tier. Georgia
Weah. Exactly.
For example.
President of Liberia, George Weah. Correct. His excellency.
Or even...
But for every George Weah, there's George Weah's cousin.
Yes. We've talked about him.
So, yeah, so who was Igor stepping off the cousin of? That's what I want to know.
Adams. Yeah.
There was a laboratory somewhere in Lithuania where they'd taken a tiny bit of DNA from Tony Adams and
hello, mate, I am Tony Adams' cousin.
Yeah.
I am cousin Igor. Igor Adams.
What was
the Adams family.
The Adams family.
He's lurch in that. Ah, oh, definitely.
What was so bad about him? Was it his positional sense, his tackling, his leadership?
I don't really recall. He was just bad at football. Just
I seem to remember him being really one of those things
easy
that
to
you
can't
and can't read and couldn't read the game. That was the thing they always say about the great centre-back, like Adams at the end of his career, like Sammy Hippier when they lose their pace. They just know where
John
Terry. They know where to be and where and like get there early rather than having to chase someone down.
Yeah, the king of that is Paul McGrath.
God. No, Paul McGrath's trick would be to tell Phil Babb where to stand.
But that's
Paul McGrath would have a seat and just like point like he was just moving traffic
just
around.
Direct.
Yeah. That's my
just get me another 21-year-old centre-back and get direct.
It's my favourite thing because obviously the classic footballing partnership we grew up with up front is big man, little man.
Yeah.
But what I like at the back
big
is...
cook, little cook.
Yeah, but at the back it's smart man, stupid man. Yeah. Like, that's what we've got. We've got Jamal Lascelles who will just shout at the other defenders for where to go. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's great.
we've got Charlie Mulgrew, like just 12 goals... in a season is mad for a defender and 5 direct free kicks. That's like Messi level.
Yeah.
Messi's got like 7 for Barcelona this season. It's just, that's a mad statistic. But then everyone else around him is kind of like poor, like he's having to do a lot of directing, I think. Yeah.
What I'd really like to see with Messi, because one of the finest sights in all the sporting world is when a keeper gets injured and an outfield player has to go in goal. I'd love to see Messi in goal, just scampering around trying to save stuff.
My best thing. Igor Stepanov is Latvian, actually, or apparently.
Latvian, sorry.
He was born in a town called Ogre.
Igor from Ogre?
Yeah, it seems quite appropriate. What's he doing at the moment? Let's see what he's doing. He's the manager of the Latvian under-17s team, currently.
He's got a Premiership middle at Arsenal.
Yeah, Premier League.
But he's only 17 appearances.
But they had to get rid of him before the Invincibles era kicked in.
He was there from 2000 to 2004. If you go up.
He's still there. Maybe. Arsenal, yeah.
17 appearances.
Went on alone, yeah. Yeah, it's so bad.
And what I really want to know is...
I don't think he was injured.
No.
Yeah, that's the really damning one, isn't
it?
I think with a name like Igor, he was essentially kept for spare parts. If another defender was really broken, they'd just like take a leg off, put on one of Igor's.
I like the way this says. His Wikipedia article says he contributed to Arsenal's 2002 triumph when featuring in a game against Newcastle during their run.
Oh, great!
that's such a little byline at the end.
Wow.
Oh,
no, he was bad.
Yeah. Well, he also, I mean, he looks bad as well. He's got the head of Gary Doherty.
Remember
Gary Doherty? Spurs and Norwich central defender. Gary Doherty came close to being on my list, mainly because he was both a central defender and a striker, according to Gary Doherty. He would line out for Ireland at centre-back, and if things were going badly, Mick McCarthy would bring on a defender and shove Gary Doherty up front.
He played 100 times for Latvia.
Yeah, Stepanovs.
Yeah.
Mad.
Well, I mean, you don't have to be that good to play for Latvia. Mate, he actually played 20 times for Lithuania, according to you. You've already won that list. you made lots of mention, Barry, of own goals. There's one scorer, prolific scorer of own goals you didn't talk about. Mm-hmm. You stuck mainly in the 20th century and yes. mainly in either the UK or Belgium. Now, we're going to go back to the UK. I'm going to talk about someone called Billy Barmer. And Billy Barmer played for Everton at the back end of the 19th century and the start of the 20th.
There was football before 1992.
There was football before 1992.
That's so weird. It's just thought there was the World Cup in 1966.
Yeah.
And then the Premier League was
and
started.
And then the level.
Yeah, it's basically like learning.
I mean, the Forest caught up really. Yeah.
If there is one
They've
line
been having to backwrite history of football since then, there was no World Cup in 1930. Uruguay didn't win a World Cup. That'd be ridiculous.
If there is one line that could perfectly encapsulate all modern British political thinking, it's those foreigners learned how to do things pretty quickly. But yeah, it's like learning GCSE at school. It's 1066, 1215, 1519, 1939, 2018.
Yeah.
But no, there was football in the past. He played 300 times for Everton. And scored one goal for them, a penalty, and 8 own goals
wow.
against them. But I just, as a little sort of B-road off this, I looked into his history. Before he played for Everton, he played for a team called South Shore, who were from Blackpool. And I looked into the history of South Shore, and I discovered a football league that needs to be mentioned on this podcast. So the Football League, as we know it, was created in 1888. However, a year after that, in 1889, there was a league called the Combination that was established. Mm-hmm. And some of the teams in the Combination included Newton Heath, who went to form on Manchester United, Grimsby Town, Lincoln City, Burslem Port Vale, Crewe Alexander, Bootle, Small Heath, South Shore, and Blackburn Olympic before they were Blackburn Rovers.
No, separate, different team.
Oh, different team?
Different team.
Wow, there was...
Blackburn Olympic also won the FA Cup separately to Blackburn Rovers.
Oh, wow. Strong
different
fact.
Team.
This league was an absolute farce. There were
we were founding members of the Football League.
You were Notts County and Aston Villa.
Yeah.
And all that. Yeah, not like the Johnny Come Latelys from Liverpool.
Yeah, but we perfected it.
Yeah. Good answer. The Combination had 20 teams in it, but there wasn't enough time for the teams to play each other once, never mind home and away. So in an average in a season, they would play 8 at home and 8 away. So there'd only be 16 games in the whole season. However, there was no central organising committee. It was just left to the teams to organise the fixtures whenever they could.
Right.
So no one knew when it was a combination game or just a friendly match. And basically, after one season, the Combination just went, should we wind this up? Let's wind this up.
So that means you could have a team be like, well, we're free every Saturday, so let's just book in loads. So they might play like 8 games,
mm-hmm.
and like another team might not only be free every once a month, they might only play 2 games in a season or something like that.
Yeah.
Is that right? Wow.
It was an absolute farce. So them and Billy Barmer have to be mentioned. But then I started looking around the world, and oh, did I find some amazing stories. Firstly, we're going to go to La Liga in Spain and talk about a man called Benjamin Telequia. Now, he played for a team called UE Fleida, double L in Spanish. Is it a th, like in Welsh?
Go for it.
I'll go for it, yeah. Fleida. Now, this was a team who were created in the early 20th century. From 1940 to 1950 was their golden era. They got promoted from the third division.
During the war.
Spain didn't take part in the war. It was under the early years of Franco.
Yeah.
So clearly they rose up because all the other players' teams were killed.
Falangista.
Yeah. So they rose from the third division to the second division, and in the second division they ran away with it. They won a game 9-2 that year. They went into the first division, they lost 25 out of the 30 games in La Liga.
Wow.
That's
nearly Derby.
That's
2005
Derby County level.
Telequia played in 23 of those games. Some of the results include losing 9-0 to Malaga, 10-1 to Deportivo de La Coruña, and 10-0 to Athletic Bilbao. Overall, they conceded 134 goals in 30 games. That is 4.5 goals a match.
In 1 year?
In one season,
Jesus
yeah.
Christ.
And Telequia was the linchpin at the centre of their defence. And if you look at a picture of him, he looks like an overweight Errol Flynn. He's got like this little pencil moustache. And my most annoying thing about him is that their strip is a blue and white Harlequin strip, so he looks like a rugby player. Later, having got up to the La Liga, then got relegated, and they didn't return to the top flight until 1994-1995. So basically, clearly, Telekia was just like, oh, I found my level, maybe this is my level. No, nosebleeds all around.
Let's never do that again.
Absolutely never do that again. So he certainly gets a mention. Then I went to Serie A in the 21st century.
Good.
And I read about a man called Andrea Masiello. Have we heard of him?
No.
So Andrea was a bit of a journeyman, played for Juventus, Atalanta, but he really came into his own playing for Bari. Now, in the 2011-2012 season, Bari and their local rivals from Puglia, Lecce, were playing at the end of the season. And basically, whoever won the game stayed up. Whoever lost the game went down. And Lecce were already winning 1-0 when a cross came in, cut out the keeper, came to Masiello, and it seemed to bounce off him into the net. And he scored the own goal that relegated Bari in the Puglia derby. However, things begin to get murkier, as you'd expect in Serie A.
Here we go.
Turns out that he had been contacted by a man called Christian Ilrebski, who was the Macedonian leader of a mafia group called the Gypsies. And the Gypsies had paid him 50,000 euros to throw the game.
What?
Yep.
Was he that... I mean, surely he earned that much a week playing in Serie A, no?
I imagine
not in Italy, I don't think. Not for Bari.
Also,
I mean that in a couple of weeks, maybe.
yeah, but maybe in like 10 weeks or something.
Yeah.
I'll level with you guys. If a Macedonian gangster came up to you and told you to do something for an inconsiderable sum of money, you'd do it.
Yeah.
Like if Christian comes up to you from Macedonia and goes, "Listen, Tez, do you mind dying on live at the Apollo?" It's like, I'm not sure. Here is your mother's address. Okay, fine. Yeah, I'm going to stink the room out.
Yeah.
So the judge in the case against him basically said these players were more or less on the market and not in the football sense of the term.
No,
Giovanni throwing some massive shade there.
Judge jokes.
Yeah. So Masiello was sentenced to 22 months in jail, but suspended. As you know, it's Italian judicial system. Lecce were relegated and Bari were docked 7 points.
Did they both go down? Or did one of them manage to...
Were
they far enough ahead
of... The following season.
For
the following season.
So Lecce stayed up but then got relegated. And for the next season, Bari were lost.
Gotcha.
7 points.
Wow.
So he certainly gets a mention. One last one before we go to my...
Who was the name of the certain defender that got murdered for Colombia?
Escobar.
Was it Escobar?
Andres Escobar, If you don't remember, 1994 World Cup, he scored an own goal against
America.
His own team when they were playing the USA. They lost 2-1. Colombia were sent home. And he was from Medellin, where the cartels were based, and he was no relation to Pablo Escobar, despite the surname, but he went home and instead of going to Nevada, he could have gone to Nevada to visit relatives, but instead he went home, and about 5 days after Colombia went out, he got into an argument in a car park outside a liquor store, I think, and was shot by a guy who apparently shouted goal as he emptied his gun into him.
Sad.
Yeah, very sad. He was apparently a really nice guy as well.
Oh, that's a real shame.
Yeah, but they sort of blamed him for Colombia going out, even though, and apparently the Wikipedia article I read about it said that he if Pablo Escobar had still been alive at that point, he probably wouldn't have been killed, because Escobar was a massive fan of Colombian football, and even though he wasn't related familially, would have just been so protective of him that anyone harming the football team would have been punished.
It's the real tragedy of Pablo Escobar's death.
You know, everyone lost out when he died.
Yeah,
really did. My penultimate choice. So, do you remember back at the end of the 20th century, John Barnes was the ill-fated manager of Celtic?
Which was a terrible appointment. I do remember that.
He bought a defender for £5 million from the Brazilian club Grêmio.
£5 million in the late 90s for Celtic is a lot of money.
Thought you were buying Cafu or Roberto Carlos.
Yeah, exactly. Even when the transfer took place, the staff and coaches at Grêmio wondered why the Scottish club were paying that much money for this player. John Barnes got sacked, this player stayed on, and the new boss was Martin O'Neill, everyone's favourite uncle. After Claudio Ranieri,
who had just left Leicester and Frank Sinclair behind.
Yeah, thank God that's over. This player was so bad that the normally friendly Martin O'Neill said to him, I like footballers who are not like you. I like footballers who play well. And this player's actual name was Raphael Scheidt.
Spelled
C-H-E-I-D-T, Raphael Scheidt. You know, and obviously I imagine at some point a Scottish commentator will have gone, oh, Scheidt's on the ball.
And there's Scheidt.
Yeah.
I just call him Chid. just to save him the
We Rafa Chid.
Yeah.
For my suggestion, we're going to go off the coast of East Africa to Madagascar.
Yes.
So, and there's... a four-team round robin between some of the top clubs in Madagascar. And in a previous match, Stade Olympique Les Mureaux had drawn 2-2 with DSA Antananarivo. And they were winning 2-1. And in the last minute, the referee had awarded a controversial penalty to Antananarivo. Just checking I'm pronouncing that right.
Antananarivo, yes, capital. Yeah.
Good. And the coach of SOE got very, very, very angry. Mm. I'm going to have a go at saying the coach's name because Madagascar clearly looked at Sri Lankan names and went, too short. His name is Ratsimandresi Ratsarazaka. And he instructed the players of his team, who were then playing the Madagascan champions, AS Adema, to score as many own goals as they possibly could in protest.
Yeah.
And the final score of this game was AS Adema 149, Stade Olympique Les Mureaux 0. And my favourite statistic about it...
Well, surely the ref would send you off for scoring a deliberate own goal.
I think the ref essentially watched it going, I can't believe this is still happening.
But you just send four players off, the match is abandoned.
Can he send someone off for scoring a deliberate own goal?
I think surely you can.
Does it count as a professional foul?
Yeah, surely you can do that.
The astonishing thing is A,
unless the keeper was instructed to make an honest attempt to save it. Or they all had to, you know, score. They'd been practicing weeks of Roberto Carlos slice kicks. Yeah. I'd have to be looking at the sideline but slicing it into the goal.
Well, I want to know, now, I didn't find out what the half-time score is, but I want to know what the coach's half-time team talk was. All right, guys, you're doing well. You're 80-0 down, but I still think we can score more own goals in the second half.
The other team's half-time team talk.
if it was a Disney film, you'd be like, right, I think I should win this.
Yeah.
We only need 81 goals in the second half, guys. Come on.
Tin cup ending. This is quite recent.
Sorry,
as well,
I missed the first bit. Why did he protest?
Because in the previous game, he felt that their penalty had been scored against, had been given against them unfairly when they were winning 2-1, which eliminated
them
from the competition.
With the officials. Was it the same official as well?
I think it was the same official. Yeah,
it was quite recent. This
it was in 2002.
Two officials in Madagascar, though. To be fair,
that's why they didn't send them off for the own goals. Neither of them knew.
And just to point out, this team, they weren't a bunch of Muppets. Like, they were the previous Madagascan champions in 2001.
Oh, no, if they can score that many goals in a game, I believe they're decent.
Do you know what? Considering how toothless Newcastle are at the minute, I don't think we could score 159 goals against ourselves.
I wonder how many times the opposition touched the ball, because every time you concede a goal, it's your kickoff.
I can tell you, my friend, that in between the opposition didn't touch the ball in between the first goal going in and the 149th goal going in.
So maybe they had the initial kickoff.
Yeah, they had the initial kickoff.
Amazing.
And that's it.
And the pre-match chat from the coach was, right, we have to get that ball off. First at the game, all 10 outfield players just land on the person with the ball, dispossess him. They'll
what would
drop
you do
back.
If you, I would just sat down if I was... I would have just gone, can I score one?
Yeah. I'll help.
Can I get a hat trick? If I was a goalkeeper, I'd go, can I score one?
Yeah.
Let me have one, please.
Do you reckon that they were just like, clearly they were playing long ball tactics against themselves. They weren't doing a little bit of ticky-tacker around the box and then in. It was just lamp it up.
I wonder what the longest period was between any of the goals.
Well, that's a goal. That's more than a goal every... There's more than two goals every minute, that rate, isn't it?
No. It's less than...
It'd be 180.
Sorry, more than it's nearly more than a goal and a half a minute, rather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wonder what was the longest period between goals.
It can't have been more than 45 seconds, maybe. But also, the speed they're doing at that, you know that if a team is like 3-0 down and then they score a goal in the last 15 minutes, they run into the net and grab the ball and run off.
Yeah.
They must have been doing that. Yeah, like, we have to embarrass ourselves so much,
you know,
to make our point.
What if you're a fan? What if you're their fan just going, What?
Do I cheer?
What is happening?
Do you, can you imagine?
Surely the home fans would have, unless they were in on it and gone, you know what, yes.
The thing is, though, isn't in football, aren't you meant to add on like 30 seconds or a minute for every goal scored in a game as well?
I don't think it's for goals.
They don't do it anymore, because it always is like, it takes about a minute for the game to restart.
Yeah.
And I think you're meant to do at least 30 seconds for every substitute. So they must add a time at the end of the game.
Yeah, they must have had like a fire bucket line ready to just hand the ball back along the 11 players, back to the centre circle, kick up back the other end.
Is there a stat of who scored the most own goals? Like, who scored them? Like, did they share them around equally? Or?
Sadly, that we couldn't find. Oh. There were four players, including the goalkeeper, who were sanctioned by the Madagascan FA and said, you are not playing for the rest of the season, which is a bit of a light slap on the wrists. But
imagine their goal difference at the end of the year.
Yeah.
They managed in one game what that team from Spain in the 40s managed in one season to concede more goals.
That is beautiful perspective. The captain of the team is a man called Mamisoa Razafind Rakoto, and he was the central defender as well. And because he was like this, again, the centre point of this, I'm going to choose him. Amazingly, this was not the final club he played for. He also played for two other Madagascan teams, one called USCA Foot, and the other one bafflingly called Japan Actuels. I try to look up why they're called Japan Actuels, but I simply don't know. But maybe they were named after that player who essentially committed footballing harakiri. Our suggestions for the world's worst central defender are the bastard's bastard, Peter Story, the worst replacement possible to Tony Adams, Igor Stepanovs, or the man of many syllables and no morals, Mamisoa Razafind Rakoto. This is tricky once again, because I've got to choose between a man who was a good footballer but a terrible human, a man who was an anonymous replacement to a hero, or a man with, frankly, a pretty impressive work ethic, but against the entire structure of the game.
We don't know the rest of his career. He might have been, might not have been a very good player.
Sounds like a real civil rights hero, like the Martin Luther King of the Madagascan football league.
I mean, I took a look at the rest of his record. He didn't score any goals, and I'll level with you. Playing for SOE, that is the top level of Madagascan football. Going down to USCA Foot and Japan's Actuels, that's very much a step down in the Madagascan league. Go on.
I was going to say, could have been the twilight of his career. He could have been that league's Darren Peacock.
He was Paul McGran. He didn't have a Phil Babb.
Yeah.
That's what he needed.
Can you imagine being Paul McGraw on a protest and shouting at Phil Babb to score own goals, and Phil Babb just keeps missing the goal?
Yes, I can very much imagine Phil Babb doing that.
Tez, I love the name Igor Stepanovs, and I love his total inaction, but the man's won medals.
Yeah, so, to be fair.
And he's a centenarian international footballer.
Yeah, for two countries, by the sound of it, as well. So I'm not going to choose him. So I'm torn between Peter Story, who was a solid footballer but an awful man, and my man Mamisoa, who is a record-breakingly bad central defender.
That's true.
And here's the thing. I think I'm going to go for my choice, and my reasoning is that Peter Story was actually a pretty good but brutal central defender, but as an organised criminal, he's barely mid-table.
I've definitely entered him in the wrong episode of this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a bad man, but compared to other criminals...
World's worst pornographer, maybe.
We'll be back with that in a few weeks, I can assure you. But because he had a Stakhanovite work ethic and consistently putting the ball in his own net, I'm going to go for Madagascar's own Mamisoa Razafind Rakoto. And what I want to know, and listeners, if you can come up with one, I want to know if there was ever a football chant for this guy's name.
Mamisoa. He's putting the miss in Mamisoa. Yeah.
That's a solid opening bit. Before we go, I've got to tell you the world's worst news. Now, here in Britain, we've experienced the worst cold snap since 1991. And I don't know about you, Tez, I had a couple of gigs pulled. And on one of them, I was gigging with our friend Dana, who's been on the podcast, who's from Canada. And having to tell a Canadian that a gig has been pulled due to 3 inches of snow is a pretty tricky prospect. She was unimpressed. But that is not the worst thing that's been pulled, or even the worst sporting event, because at the Dartmoor Union Inn, they were set to stage the country's first international snail grand national in aid of the local air ambulance service, which was a pretty essential service during the cold snap. However, they had to call it off because temperatures got so low that the snails went into hibernation and refused to race. Sad times, isn't it? I know. So that
Can
is
you just give them undersoil heating.
Yeah, yeah. That would just melt the snails.
It's hard to install a radiator into a shell.
So that's very sad news. Before we go, Tez, where can people find you and what can they find you doing there?
So please go on my website, tezilias.com, T-E-Z-I-L-Y-A-S.com. And I'm going on tour from the 27th of March till 25th of May this year. My new show, Testify. So please come and watch that. I'm going all over the country, so that would be very, very nice. And I'm doing bits and bobs on TV and radio and stuff.
Lovely stuff. We're all off to leave 149 one-star reviews on this podcast in protest. Until next time, bye-bye.
Bye.
Mamazo Razafindra Kotter. If you say his name three times, he appears beside you and lets in 17 goals.
I thought that you were like speaking in tongues there. That was...
Yeah. Thanks very much, Tez, for doing the show and helping us relive the glory days of the Premier League and indeed other dark corners of the footballing world. Do check him out. Do check out his website and see if he's gigging you. As he said, he's doing a big UK tour. So if you live somewhere near a big city, chances are he'll be near you.
He almost certainly will. And if you want to be near us and have us be near your ears, there are all sorts of the usual things you can do. Most important of all, if you're a brand new listener to this, which you may well be, if you enjoyed the show, go back and have a listen to the first 60 episodes that we popped out.
Oh my God, have we done 60 of these?
Yes, mate, we've done that many. And also, if you have literally 30 seconds, do the best thing you can do for any podcaster. Leave us a 5-star review, write a line about how much you like it, and recommend it to your mates.
Literally, if you don't give us a 5-star review, it's just you and one other person who has given us a 1-star review.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
They didn't write a review, they just clicked the 1-star, but joke's on you, buddy, because our average is still 5 stars.
Yeah, so. not that we...
iTunes rounds up.
Yeah. And by that, we mean that iTunes rounds up people who give 1-star reviews, so...
Oh, if you listen to us on Stitcher, by the way, we were in their top, 100 fastest growing podcasts recently, so
yes.
If you're one of the people who's been helping us with our burgeoning Stitcher career, which we were unaware of until we got an email, well, thank you, and keep recommending us to our friends and keep doing that.
Yeah, keep doing that. There's going to be all sorts of exciting things on the horizon. Our website is going to be launched in the next couple of weeks. Alongside that will be our Patreon, and on top of that, a fun and surprise little competition that we'll tell you more about next week. Who's our next guest, Barry?
Have we done the Twitter things?
Oh, yeah. Follow us on @WorstFoot. Follow him on @BazMcStay. Me on @BenVanderveld. That's Ben Vanderveld, not Benjamin Vanderveld, because he is an architect in Belgium.
And we're also on Facebook, of course, which is where all the old people live now, apparently. Mm-hmm. We are not on Snapchat. We will never be on Snapchat. And, send us an email if you want to get in touch. WorstFootForwardPodcast@gmail.com. Our guest next week is the excellent actor, writer, performer, John Dryden Taylor, who will be joining us to talk about the world's worst opening ceremonies in true Worst Foot Forward style. We have saved our opening ceremony for episode 63.
Bring out the children dressed inexplicably as Turkish goblins doing ballet.
I want them to have massive papier-mâché Ben Vanderveld heads on.
Mate, that's what I've been wearing for the past 35 years.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward, and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @Podnose, or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.